Okay, right on. All right. Thank you all for joining us today. Very excited to be here. For those coming in, come on in, grab a seat. There's plenty of room. For everyone in the room, please do turn off your cell phones. We want to make sure there's no lovely songs serenading us during our panel today. So I'm really excited to be here. My name is Jennifer Duff. I am with Accenture Life Sciences, a managing director. I run our global R&D operations work for plenty of pharma clients in this area. So I'm very excited to be here. And I don't know if you've seen the news, but we're incredibly proud of our inclusion and diversity programs. And so we're a huge proponent of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. We recently have our female CEO, Julie Sweet, which is phenomenal given the size of our organization. That's a fantastic honor and a representation of how important inclusion and diversity is to us as a company. So I'm really thrilled today to welcome quite a great panel of women who are here to share their stories, and we have a wonderful facilitator coming up. In the couple minutes that I met Maxie, I must say she's very energetic and seems like a wonderful person. I'm very much looking forward to this panel. And as you've seen from her bio, she is quite the public speaker, lots of experience and wonderful information to share with all of you, along with all of our wonderful panelists today. So welcome to the You're Not Lost session. We have about an hour. There will be time for Q&A at the end, so please hold your questions, jot them down, make sure you're ready to participate in that. And if you'd like, let's put our hands together and welcome Maxie McCoy.
Hi! I don't think my mic's on just yet. Hello.
Hello. Oh, there she is. Oh, this is going to be a really good Wednesday afternoon. I have to know, was anyone in our first You're Not Lost session? Is anyone doing a double? That doesn't count. Emily was. I just wanted to know if there were any special people doing a double, because you would know that I told them that that was going to be my favorite hour. But I'm going to tell you that you're going to be my favorite hour. And no one besides the thousands of people on live stream, oh, I'm getting caught by you. You're my double favorite hour, are gonna know. I'm excited to kick off this conversation, which is coming to life so beautifully. My book is called You're Not Lost, and so I'm excited to be able to talk with some really brilliant women around their entry points into this same conversation, but from some different perspectives. So I wanna kick this off by seeing a show of hands. Who in any area of their life has ever felt lost in the past? Okay, yeah, you're in the right spot. Who is feeling particularly lost right now in any area of their life? Yeah, we got a lot of people that are like, I'm gonna go ahead and just keep my hand up here, right? Raise your hand if you wrote a book called You're Not Lost and felt really effing lost yourself. I really wanted to drop the F-bomb, didn't do it. So what you couldn't see if you were sitting up here, which is really and truly every single person's hand in this room, was raised. And I know this to be true, that it's not just true of this room because you picked this session. But in my 8 years working in the women's leadership space, and what I do is I facilitate women's stories on paper, on stage. I literally get to talk to women for a living, which is, I don't really know how I ended up here. I ended up here by feeling really effing lost, which we're gonna get to. But in that work and in this body of work, there was one thing that I heard over and over and over again. It did not matter if I was in London or here in Philadelphia or New York or Minneapolis or Denver or LA, the same thing was being told to me in every conversation with women. I was hearing, I feel lost. I feel so lost. Which I was like, well, I had felt that way at one point in my life, so I knew that to be true in my own experience. But what I didn't understand, why we were necessarily feeling this way. And as someone who likes to ask a lot of questions and then connect the dots of advice and people out there and what's going on and what are we telling women, when I was looking, what are we telling women who are feeling this way? There were some really well-intentioned but shitty advice, which you're going to have heard before. You need, if you feel lost, this is what I was finding, just need to figure out what your passions are. Come on, didn't you know? and then figure out what your purpose is, and you're gonna be fine and successful. And I don't even know if you need to get out of bed in the morning. So we all know that that isn't necessarily what is true. I knew it was well-intentioned, but I also knew it wasn't solving the problem, because every woman that I had the opportunity to speak with was brilliant and hardworking and doing all of the quote-unquote right things, but still they were feeling this way. And the more I asked women who had created amazing success, just like the women we're gonna talk to today, who had at one point felt that way, when I talked to the people who were currently in the thick of that loss fog, there were two main themes that continued to come up, which were A, either we had done all the things we always said that we were gonna do, that whatever, you know, pink highlighter goal we said we were gonna get to, whatever we glamorized and worked our butts off for, maybe worked our whole careers off for, and then we got there, and the bottom just totally falls out on the goal, right? It's like, well, I said I wanted this, but I don't really want this. And if I don't want this, I don't know what I do want. And if I don't know what I do want, I don't know what to do right now. So then we get lost and stuck and don't do much. Scenario A, or scenario B, a lot of what I heard was, I've been doing all the things that everybody told me to do, what society said I should do, what a college education said I should do, what a partner said I should do, what family said I should do. And then I get there and I'm like, I don't really want this at all. And you wake up and it's like, well, I'm awake, but I don't know what I want. And if I don't know what I want, I don't know what to do right now. And that cycle just continues, right? And if we're not moving, the fog just kind of builds up and we end up stuck and we literally don't know what to do about it. What I have found in all of the body of this work, and having also felt that way myself, I had started my career in sports broadcasting as on-air talent, ended up with, you know, a gig in a top five market that everyone thought was incredible, and hair was very platinum blonde and 90% fake. A lot of clip-ins. Love me some clip-ins, still have them in, but just a little bit different. And I knew, you know, I knew from that experience and from having felt like I potentially peaked in high school that there was something else available to me, that there was something that I was missing, and being able to move kind of this fog aside, and it lasted for me for a really long time. And so I was really excited and energized by this work, to interview women who had felt lost at one point and figured out what are the solutions here? And the more that I searched and the more that I interviewed and the more that I wrote, the thing became really clear, which is that you actually don't need another speaker, another panel, another book, another podcast, or a worksheet to help you figure this out. You just need stories of women that you can see yourself in and people to come along and ask you the right questions that are gonna facilitate you to your own wisdom. You've got the answers. We just kind of have to lead you back there, because the answers are different for everyone. We're not gonna have the prescription for how you feel unlost up here, buzzkill, I know. But hopefully you will see yourself in the women that I'm about to moderate this conversation with. You'll see yourself in some of the advice that works, some of it doesn't. I'm sure it all works. But I hope that, you know, through this conversation, that you just are able to see a reflection back to understanding what it's gonna take for you to build a deep sense of self-belief and then start and get going, because that's when the lost fog starts to clear. So with that, I would like you to join me in giving a huge round of applause for our panelists. Come on up. That we're gonna moderate this conversation with.
Thanks, Maxie.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello, everybody. What a room.
I know.
Post-lunch fog also.
It's fog.
Yes? Are we feeling lost? You're in the right place.
Did anyone catch the Girl Scout cookie exhibition? Because they have Girl Scouts. It's not Girl Scout cookies. They have them. They have Girl Scouts. You're like, yeah, it's an exhibition. They have Girl Scout cookies, and they can bring it to you, but it's not January. So I'm feeling very excited.
Ladies, jury's out on whether or not my legs are crossing.
Hey, look.
It's good.
Look at that.
What's
everyone
happening?
Put the feet in and of itself.
It is. Kelly, you're crushing it. So I want to start by just hearing from the three of you. If you'll tell this beautiful room a little bit about you and your work. And Kelly, I'll start on this end with you.
Okay. Well, first, I just want to say this. Being lost is a superpower.
Yeah.
The best parts of yourself. I would not have launched two companies if I had never been lost. So being lost is a good thing, even if it doesn't feel good in the moment. I own a company called Prepare to Launch. My business partner, Susan, is here with me. We work with women in all different trajectories of career and life. We focus on the whole woman because you are not just your career and you are not just your life. Mm-hmm. There are many, many parts of you. It's a learning company. We work with companies and corporations. And we have online. We actually went online last year.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. We have online courses for women, women who have opted out of the workforce to care for family, taken that time off, and are now re-entering the workforce. We teach a soup to nuts. Who are you now? Because your life is vastly different after you have a child. Mm-hmm. And what direction do you want to go in? And what are the obstacles that are going to get in your way? And how can you navigate around them? And then we give you all those tangible tools like, you know, your LinkedIn profile and how to really, you know, tell a compelling story and have a fantastic resume. And then just this last year, we launched a maternity leave.
Yes.
Shockingly, I am a mother of three boys, and my youngest is 11. I have a 16-year-old, a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old. And then this spring, somebody decided he wanted on the train. So I am pregnant with boy number four. And
amazing.
Talk about doing work about helping women navigate their way back and feeling lost. My business partner wiped many, many a tear when I realized, oh my God.
Yeah.
We were on this train and now we're going on this train in the spring of last year. But truly, and this is the funny part of this story. I actually ended up, we were filming this maternity leave course, and I found out that I was pregnant. As my business partner and I are practicing, she's like, just work this section out with me, Kel. You pretend you're pregnant, and you're going to go on maternity leave.
Oh, you summoned it.
And then I just burst into tears and said, oh, my God, I'm pregnant. I really am pregnant.
She's like, great acting. Wow. Awesome. Goes, too.
So, but there is so much to navigate when you're navigating a maternity leave or a family leave, and we help women do that.
Yeah. Awesome. That's awesome. I'm so grateful for that story. I love surveying the room. Who is in the middle of a pretty major life change, like a life event that is causing these feelings? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Just keeping that as a note. Tanya. Yeah.
And I wish I knew about that when I was pregnant. I remember my maternity leave, I was out for 5 weeks. Oh. And they said, time to come back in to work.
Oh. So, jeez.
Yes. Yes. We are working with companies and corporations on that whole conversation, too.
Perfect. Not my company today. This one I was in the hospital.
Yeah.
So I'm Tanya Small. Who am I? I am a mom, a woman. I am a pediatric hematologist, oncologist, and bone marrow transplanter.
Woo! That was a mouthful. Amazing.
Right now, dedicating my life to helping people who have cancer. And currently I am the medical oncology head at GSK. A company really dedicated to make an impact in these people's lives. So that's where I am. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about that
later
as we go.
We're gonna dive on in.
Ah, yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. I am Emily Aries. I'm so excited to join Maxi here for this encore conversation. I'm a speaker, a podcaster, an author, and I focus on helping women navigate career transition. I find out why we're leaving and how we can advocate for the careers that we want. I also speak at companies and conferences and help organizations understand how to retain and develop their women talent so that we don't have to leave and we don't
That's
have
right.
to flee. I actually started my career a decade ago in the midst of the Great Recession. Any fellow entitled millennials here? Yeah, how entitled of us. So I, like so many of my peers, graduated ready to save the world and then had to figure out how to save my own ass. by finding a job in 2008 and 2009. I was very fortunate to parlay an internship in my and really use my political science and cognitive science degree, where I'd studied how we collectively make decisions, like why the United States is the only developed nation with no parental leave rights guaranteed for all workers, for just as an example, and how we make decisions up here, how our personal choices are constrained by our social constructs and vice versa. And so I was able to parlay that internship in digital political strategy into a state director position on behalf of the newly elected Obama administration. So I spent the next 3 years as the youngest state director in the nation, helping organize my community, helping empower people to make their voices heard, grow their power as a dynamic force that can be expanded when we work together, and demand and advocate for the things that we want to see happen in our country. That entire time, I lost the ability to advocate for myself. I was so busy martyring myself for the cause, for the campaign, for the people I loved. I remember finding myself driving through my alma mater's campus in Providence, Rhode Island, and I don't know if you've ever felt this way, but I was slumped over my steering wheel, bone tired, just tired of feeling tired, that kind of achy, rattly feeling. And I remember, I'm a frustration crier, I don't know if anyone here can relate to that. But I had been spending my life up until that moment perfecting, performing, and pleasing. That's what students do, right? We figure out what the syllabus requires of us, we go home, put our nose to the grindstone, and deliver what that professor wants. And I'd been very adept at figuring that out. So 3 years into this career, as I sat there crying frustration tears, I remember feeling a wave of jealousy hit me when I saw these students crossing the crosswalk in front of my car. And I thought, I'm 3 years ahead of those students. I'm in my dream job. Everything looks great on paper. So why can I not just be grateful for what I have? Mm-hmm. What is wrong with me? So not only did I feel sad, I felt bad for feeling sad. What a fun layer of emotions that is. And it was truly in that moment, thinking of all the people who came before me, my family, my loved ones, but also the women who fought hard for our rights to choose what we want to make of this one and precious life. And I thought to myself, life's too short to feel bad for feeling sad. If I'm feeling like I'm not on the right path, I don't know what the right path is yet, but I have to commit myself to figuring it out. And that was the beginning of a much longer journey.
Now Bossed Up is here. Bossed Up, the book is here.
Which Bossed Up, the book is here. A decade later, I spend my life helping other women advocate for what they want out of work and life. And the Bossed Up book entails everything I've learned and 15 other women in our community have gone through in the past decade.
So we're going to dive into all of that
yes.
and this and just so many things. But Kelly, I want to start with you because I think that the idea around pivoting is true, right? When we are feeling lost, what you were doing is you're making a change around what has gone on versus what needs to happen next. And the thing that I hear over and over again, as I'm sure you've heard, is, well, I don't know where to go. How am I supposed to pivot if I don't know what I'm pivoting to?
Yes.
What do you tell someone who feels that way?
Well, if you are expecting the skies to part and there to be sunshine, rainbow, and unicorns that come down and say to you, this is the direction you should go in, pivot now, never gonna happen.
Yeah.
That's not how it happens. So I just wanna take that myth away.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanna take it away is because sometimes we cling to that. I can't do this until I know exactly what the path looks like.
Mm.
You are not gonna know what the path is gonna look like. You have to start to step. And we teach our women, we talk to them about this idea of it's a journey that you're on. It's a process. And once you kind of take yourself off the hook for having to know right now and look at it as this is going to take some time and I'm going to have some patience and I'm going to have to do things like put myself out there when I don't feel ready because I am doing something that we call, when we're teaching our women, exploring and assessing. I'm going to do a little exploring, and then I'm going to assess. Does this feel right? Is this the direction that I want to go in? You can take a new job, and that can actually be exploring and assessing. You can start a new business, and that actually can be exploring and assessing. you can just have a networking conversation with someone, and that's exploring and assessing. So instead of looking for your, I love mm-hmm. that you said that, because, wow. Oh my God, Suze, do we not say this all the time?
Hey, woman.
Oh my God. It's find
a
your passion.
Woman version
you know,
of
go
amen.
Find your passion, or go figure out exactly who you are.
It's just
zero direction,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Instead, follow the energy. So, for example, I started my career in education. My very first teaching job, I had 29 students in my classroom. Mm. 17 of which were boys, 14 of which had IEPs, and if you don't know what they are, that's a lot to navigate. There's a lot of legal that goes with that. And I knew, I came from a long line of educators, so I said to myself, this is the direction, this is the path. I knew where I was going, and I was miserable. Mm. I was miserable every day. I would go home and I would cry, and I was thinking to myself, this was right, Kelly. Like, you knew what direction you wanted to go in. And what I know now is that it's the quality of the work I was doing. I wanted to be a teacher. Mm. That's what I wanted to do. I love to teach. It's in my bones. It's in my DNA. It's in my fabric. So guess what? I now own an online learning company. Mm-hmm. And I teach women all over the country, but in a very non-traditional way. So I would say to you, if you right now are trying to figure out what direction to go in, go back to the job that you're miserable in, if you're miserable, or go back to whatever it is that you're doing in your current life and say to yourself, what gives me energy? What project have I worked on that actually gives me energy and makes me feel good and like I could do that all day long and never pick my head up from it? So that's one. And number two is curiosity. Is somebody doing something that you think to yourself, that looks like the coolest freaking job I have ever heard of? Make a coffee with them.
Yeah.
Don't say this to them. I want to pick your brain. Because that will be such a turnoff to a very busy person.
They'll say no.
Yeah.
Yes. Bring them food or a coffee to their desk or to their place of work and say to them, I have some real specific questions. What is it that you do, you know, one day of work? Tell me what your morning looks like. You know, get a real understanding, and what you're doing is exploring and assessing.
Mm-hmm. Piggyback off of that
briefly.
When I was finding myself feeling quite lost, instead of having that really positive view of someone who was doing such a cool job, like, wow, what she's doing is so interesting. I don't know if you've ever felt this way, but I was more like rage quitting social media when I saw someone doing what I wanted to be doing.
You blocked them?
Yeah, I was like, ugh, I can't even see this person's glow up anymore. I'm like annoyed by it. So I also just want to acknowledge that sometimes our negative emotions, like jealousy, envy, longing, those negative emotions can also be helpful road signs. So if you're in a place in your life where you have those feelings, again, our society teaches us to suppress those negative emotions, to bottle them up, to never give them any airtime. And I would argue if we can lean into that with curiosity, get curious, not furious, if we can look at the people who their glow up is bugging us and say, what am I actually envious of here? Mm-hmm. It can also be helpful in pinpointing your deeper desires. Because sometimes feeling lost comes from a lifetime of being told that you shouldn't want more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's such a power in what both of you are saying, right? Is when you're in that place of having to figure out what to do next, on the positive side, you look for what energizes you.
Yeah.
Right? And those things can tell you what to then explore and at the same time sit in your shit a little bit and figure out what that negative is about. Totally. There are so many different types of just kind of what both of you are saying and what I know to be true of all three of you in your careers, none of this goes brilliantly. We expect like smooth, this wonderful path that like feels really good.
Sunshine, rainbow, and unicorns.
Yeah, and it's so not true. And I know that even, you know, sitting in a life or a, you know, a book tour, whatever it is of all these things that you've said that you wanted, you're like, dealing with all kinds of BS, and it just has to be a trade-off. Tanya, I want to ask you, you know, you have had very real obstacles that have shown up for you in your path, and I want to know more about them and what it has taken to get through to get to where you're sitting today.
Mm. Sure, and I mean, even going back to what you said, the journey.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that because the way I kind of look at life is my university, and maybe because I've been in school so long. It's just the next school. And that is life,
right?
That's the next school. So I'll stop here and just even say that I am actually tremendously proud of the life that I'm living.
Yeah.
And as women, we're embarrassed or ashamed to brag or say things positive about ourselves. And that to me is really important, right? Because the obstacles that we have in front of us, that we go over, that we push away or we go under or through, a lot of it makes us who we are.
Yep.
And we all have blemishes from them. We all have scars from them. And I used to be afraid to talk about my blemishes because I thought I was the only one with them. Mm-hmm. And then I went to work and I found everyone had them too.
Yeah.
Which opened it up for me. So if I can leave you with, I guess, two lessons that I learned from my obstacles, I think then my job is done here.
You can sleep. You can go eat the Girl Scout cookies.
So I'll start with the first one. So imagine when we're younger and we're in school, our goal is to really please, I mean, our parents, right? So I remember I had to get all A's, and whenever I got all A's, my mother was very proud. Tanya, what did you get on your test? I said, Mommy, what do you think I got on my test? And she would say, 100. And I'm like, no, 98. Then she'd say, well, what happened to the other 2 points? Right?
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Or you play the piano, you dance, you did all these things, and you did it because you wanted people to be proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
And all that validation came external, right? Mm-hmm. Out to in.
Yeah.
It was all about what people thought about you. So I did that, and I became valedictorian in eighth grade, and I was really, really good. Yeah.
Damn.
And then high school hit, and it's called freedom. Like, I didn't have to go to class if I didn't want to. No one found out. And I enjoyed high school way too much. Mm. And I ended up getting pregnant at 17.
Mm.
And all the disappointment just crashed, right? So my father basically said, well, I don't have a daughter, right? And everyone that was so proud of me, this person who got all A's, no, I was not that person any longer. And that external pride that people had was no longer there.
Mm.
So I remember going to college right after, I mean, I had my daughter and started college like that next month. And I remember just walking with my head down because I was ashamed of who I was.
Mm.
Because I was no longer that person. And then a year later, I had to figure out what did I want to do. And I didn't know because people were talking about, well, you should do this. Well, you have a kid, you can't do all these different things. And all the chatter in my ears, I had to then shut everything down and shut everyone out and figure out what was my true purpose. What mattered to me? What do I want to do with my life? And it was Tanya's decision. And from then on, and there was something that clicked in me that realized, like, it's about me. It's about my happiness. It's about what I want to do. And no matter how much I try to please people, people are never going to be satisfied. Right? And so I can no longer determine who I am based on what people wanted me to become. And in that moment in time, I decided I'm going to be a physician. Now, of course, people say, well, then how are you going to be a physician with a child? How are you going to do this with your single mom? How is this going to happen? And that's when, again, I had to say it's about my purpose and about what I wanted to do, which then leads me to lesson number two. So the first one is, can never live up to people's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna have to be about you. And that, to me, is liberating. Mm-hmm. The second one is, so fast forward, when I had my daughter, I didn't have any money, so she went to a school where everyone was working hard. The parents didn't hang out in the halls and drink coffee all day. And my son I had, who's 11 now, at this moment in time, I had more money, so of course I tried to put him in the best schools. And then the parents would say, well, come to coffee hour on Tuesdays or Friday mornings at 9 a.m. And I couldn't make it. And they would say, you know, Tanya, we missed you. When are we going to see you? And then I said, well, did you ask his father? When are you going to see him? Then class trips, of course, I couldn't make them because I'm working. And so I remember the last day of one of his school years, the teacher says, the week before, she says, well, you know, we're going to the zoo. You haven't been in all year in terms of a class trip. You haven't read the books to the students. are you going to at least make it to this?
Wow.
So.
Girl, so I go, please.
I said.
Everyone's taking right? off their earrings. Ready to go, yeah.
So then I said, well, did his father turn it down? Because I wanted to know. Why me? I mean, he, right? It's two of us that had him, and yet they expected that the mother was the one that had to, that did not have the career that was demanding. Now, mind you, his dad worked half the time I worked, but they never went to him. So then they said, well, you know, we have to work on your life, your work-life balance, you know, just as a female friend, right? Work-life balance, right? So I'm listening. I go, my work-life balance is fine. I've defined what that is. I don't know about you. But to me, that was just telling on the expectations as, because I am a mom, they saw me as a mother, sister, friend instead of just a woman, right? And when they talk about men, oh, he's a great man. But yet I am a great, I'm either a great mom, sister, or friend. And that, right, was a light bulb to me. Mm-hmm. And so when I had to explain to her, well, my work-life balance was what I defined it to be. I chose this, right? And in life, I look at it as a seesaw. We cannot do it all Mm-mm. at once, right? You cannot do everything at the same time. Mm. So there are times when something's going to take priority and something's not, right? And then there are times that things are going to shift the other way, and this is going to be life. Different decades, we have different things that take priority. And I had to define for myself what I was going to prioritize at that time, because I had to be my best self. And once I became my best self for me, I became my best self for my kids.
Yeah. You know, Tanya, we call that a work-life synergy.
Ah.
Versus a work, there is no freaking balance. No.
I know, I was like,
I have four, I'm about to have four kids. There is gonna be no balance in what's about to happen.
There is no balance, and it's okay.
Yeah, I think what you're pinpointing on too, within the context of this story that is so brilliant in the way that it relates to these feelings of truly feeling lost is all of the messages, and Emily, you kind of said this too, that are telling us that we can't do something,
right.
That we can't make the change, that we don't deserve to be there, that we have to change X, Y, and Z in order to move, in order to begin. Mm. And Kelly, I'm curious from you, you know, getting pregnant 11 years after you were on a train and then you said you had to choose a new one. Were there any messages that you have found in this transition that were telling you, you can't do this. You can't be a business owner and external and at conferences and have three kids at home and pregnant with another a decade later.
And you know who was telling them?
Who?
Me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was saying it to me. I was saying to myself, when I'm like a puddle with my business partner telling her that this was happening, I felt like everything that I have been working for, like, how is it gonna look? What's the change gonna be that I'm gonna have to make in my life? What's the sacrifice that I'm gonna have to make? And one of the things we say to our students all the time is, I had a period of time where I opted out with my boys and I stayed home with my three sons that I currently have. And I did not realize, and I know I was fortunate to be able to stay home with them. I really, like, in my heart, I understand that I was able to take that time. But there is sacrifice in that. There are parts of me that went to sleep and got lost during that time. And that's not something that everybody talks about. Mm. There are parts of me that I had to wake back up again. And I almost have, like, PTSD oh my gosh, is that what's gonna happen? Except I'm 11 years older, 11 years wiser, and I happen to be doing this for a living now. So
right.
So
but there's a beauty in having to relearn your own work
completely.
In a way, right?
And it really goes to that synergy. Like I have to find that synergy, we all do, and I cannot do this alone.
Yeah.
I wanna speak to that because it's so interesting to hear both of you talk about your identity. Because that's really what a lot of this boils down to, is struggling with, I wasn't that girl anymore. I wasn't that person anymore, or a part of me went to sleep. A lot of our identity is shaped by the cultural narratives around what a good woman is.
Yes.
So let's just remember that those messages that were coming from you, they didn't come from nowhere.
Yes.
You're feeling this way.
It's not your fault, right? Yeah. These are cultural messages we've inherited from history.
Right.
And the cool news is, the good news is, we're on the cusp of changing history. Each one of our choices, and every time we take back our own narrative and redefine our identity for ourselves, We're making more possible for the girls and women and boys and men who come after us, right?
And I totally agree with this because I am raising 4 white males.
Exactly.
And so let me tell you something.
They're about to be woke.
They will know how to change a diaper.
Yeah.
They will know how to, carpool.
Yeah.
They will know how to do all of those things, yeah.
And they'll be going to coffee time.
Yes, they will.
What I love is looking at that identity that you're creating about yourself as an iterative process. Yes. Any design thinking nerds here, like myself? Yeah. It's this cyclical process where the actions you take, the reactions that the world gives you when you choose to say no to the zoo or whatever the choice is, to take time off, like that reaction is internalized. So we act, we make a boss move, right? We choose one way or the other. We get a reaction, positive, negative, somewhere in between. Then we have to internalize that message. And that internalizing part is so key. Carol Dweck talks about mindset in 2 forms, right? A growth versus a fixed mindset. If you internalize a negative message that says this is about who you are, it makes you risk averse in terms of taking another step. Yeah. It chips away at your identity. But if you instead look at that reaction as a reflection of what you did, how you did it, your tactics and strategies, or sometimes people are just projecting their own baggage back onto you, we can see this process as building up your identity as it also and also defending our identity from being chipped away. Because there's a...
Or protecting it, right?
Yeah.
Protecting it.
Yeah.
There's a... Well, I think we were having this conversation upstairs about boundaries.
Right.
Right? So why don't they teach us boundaries in high school or college, that here's what a boundary actually looks like, and here's how to set it and articulate it to the world.
And defend it.
So boundary 101 right now. Here's what is okay, and here's what is not okay.
The one challenge I had with our lovely keynote, Elizabeth Gilbert, as she was talking about the special ring of preciousness, right, or what is sacred, is that there is a lot of privilege in being able to say no. In being able to delete all your emails from your inbox without getting fired, just as an example. And part of the biggest chapter in my book is about assertive communication. We've been taught that assertive is the same as aggressive. Mm-hmm. It's not. Being assertive is about claiming your rights while keeping the door open and respecting other people's rights. And oftentimes, women who are assertive are heard and seen and viewed in our sexist world as aggressive. For women of color, doubly challenging. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to not only give permission to all people to say no, we also have to understand that not all of us can say no. Mm-hmm. And all you can really do is do the best you can to grow your power and then use your power to defend yourself, to make sure you're feeling respected. And one thing I forgot to mention at the top of the hour is I'm giving away my last free copy of my book. So here's how this is going to work. If you want to learn more about assertive communication, take a photo of this lovely panel, tell us what you learned, and tag me on Instagram at bossed.org or Emily Aries.
And you might win her book.
I'll deliver this to you before I leave for the airport. But we'll also be signing. We'll be signing things later, too.
And I think, you know, when you talk about that, of the privilege to have a choice, it made me think of, you know, one of the things that is always helpful that we talk about in this space a lot when you don't, not when you don't know, or maybe you do know what you want to do next, to start to try and shift these feelings and try and kind of take a step out of feeling lost, the fear pops up, right? There's just like so much fear around actually making that change and making that move. And we'll talk about, do your worst case scenario, really understand what are the different things at play here. And for some people, those worst case scenarios are not one you should take on. Right. Mm-hmm. And then for others, there's a soft place to land. And so I think being very real about those differences and what can exist and how a lot of this advice can apply to other places. Tanya, I'm curious from you within this context. I'm so interested about the idea of you being 18 years old with a 1-year-old. Deciding you're going to be, you know, a physician and having all these people tell you that you can't. I am 31, and the idea of getting pregnant scares the shit out of me. Much less.
Or 44.
Or 44. Yeah, wow. But I'm so curious of, like, What were you tapping into and how to push those voices aside to just do what you knew to be true?
So interestingly, based on what I'm hearing, people are saying that we don't say live our purpose, but I had to, right? It was my purpose. It was like,
you can
I
take
had
my
to
advice and throw it up there, though.
I had to
like
define
one
it.
Out of 10 times.
I had to define it, yeah. Right? I had to say and double down on it, Tanya, why are you here?
Yeah.
What is your mission? What is your goal? And then I had to, I mean, laser focus, go against it because people would try to push me in different directions. And for me to stay steady on my two feet, I had to keep remembering this is my purpose. And I remember people were saying you can't. And then I had to say, well, and this thing, people have heard me say this many times, but if it can be done, then I can do it, right? And that to me is, I mean, it drove me every day. If it can be done, then I can do it. And if it hasn't been done, then I will invent it, right?
Oh,
and
I
had to believe in myself enough to know that that's where I needed to go. And I had to believe in my purpose enough to say I'm on my right path.
Yeah.
That no one can ever define that right path for me except for myself. Ooh. And whatever the consequences are, then I'll deal with
that's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? That's right.
So
I think that you have so tapped into that power and also on the topic of purpose. It is, I am living it. You are living it. You are living it. Mm. It is so powerful once you know what it is.
Yes.
It's not always a starting point, right? And if you don't, sometimes you'll find it on the other side. Sometimes it will drive you from the beginning and then being able to sort out what that is. Yes.
And sometimes, radical notion here, your purpose won't yield a paycheck.
Right.
And then there's that.
Sometimes the life outside of work that we all used to have that we should not call side hustles, right? Remember hobbies? Remember what hobbies were? Like the life outside of work can also be a source of purpose.
Yeah.
And that's where we can fuel our passions. Not everyone needs to take their crafting pro
make a
on
million
Etsy.
Dollar business. Yeah.
Yeah. So like it's okay to not get a paycheck from your purpose.
And that actually will solving lost. If that's what you're feeling, is to your point, not always solved through a job.
Right.
It can be solved in
that's
a lot
so
of different.
It's so taboo for millennials to say.
I mean, it's hard for me to say out loud.
I love
but
it.
Yeah, but you're 100% right, and it's true. And Emily, I want to keep this on you in the topic of there being so many options and so many things to do. And I think that when we're constantly looking around, right, we see all these different people doing all these different things. And whether you are working for someone else or you are working for yourself, there are a lot of you as a business owner. There are a lot of options. You can speak. You can do a podcast. You can do speaking. You can have a television show. You can, like, create all these things because you're a self-creator. What is your filtering system with which you choose to move forward?
Mm.
Similar to Tanya saying, it is her purpose. That is what is driving her forward. What is driving you into the next step?
Honestly, I have to remember one of my core beliefs, which is focus is a better predictor of success than hard work and intelligence alone.
Mm-hmm.
Focus is the better predictor of success.
Say it one more time.
Focus is a better predictor of success than hard work and intelligence alone. We were all indoctrinated into the hard work club because it was true for our grandparents. That was certainly a thing. But the American dream is less accessible now than it used to be. And it's under attack. So part of my message here is that grow your power so we can leverage your power to help other people grow their power too. And so I went from being in politics as a professional political operative and advocate to being an entrepreneur who helps women grow their power financially, through their careers, through negotiation, assertive communication, whatever, saying no, which is the subject of my TEDx talk, so that we can also be the ones who are lobbying, not just going to the zoo, right? Let's be the ones who are testifying on our state capitol's door, our capitol's front door, right? So how do I prioritize?
What does that focus look like?
I'm a big cognitive science junkie. And so what I did was I took a lot of the literature and latest research around why women in particular tend to experience high levels of guilt and role overload. That's the term in the literature. Role overload is that feeling of being competed over by your multiple obligations, the different hats you wear to different people. And how your time and resources are so finite, feeling like you're pulled in a million directions. And I created a tool called the Bossed Up Life Tracker, which we have a free download of in the Bossed Up website, bossedup.org, and then a planner that came out of that, that takes all this interesting research on goal attainment. How do you pursue multiple long-term goals and sustain your motivation over a decade or over a year, not just over a day or a week? And there's an interesting nugget I want to leave you with that we build into this plan. Thinking about motivation requires thinking about the head and the heart. Anyone here studied like the psychology of motivation? You've got to have your heart engaged, meaning that fire in your belly that fuels you, what you were talking about, your purpose fuels you, feeling aligned with something you really care about. That's got to be there. Anyone tried to go to law school and then 2 years in, you're like, I just can't make this happen. I can't pretend to want this
anymore.
Sounded
good. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a very analytical person, you might lean more towards your head. Your head tells you how to problem solve your way there. So your heart tells you what the destination is. Getting in touch with your heart is hard for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. Your head tells you, here's a pitfall to avoid, here's the plan to come up with a strategy. If you lean heavily towards your head, the analytical part of goal attainment, you might be very adept at planning the life and career that someone else would love. So you might get very busy succeeding in someone else's eyes, but not your own. Long-term goal attainment is about balancing the head and the heart of motivation. Retaining a sense of internal clarity about what you want and exploring that when you feel lost about it, taking the time to explore it, and pairing that with the problem-solving, project management part of our brains that helps balance that and sustain that motivation over the long term.
There's so much there.
I geek out about it in my book.
9 million follow-up questions on, but I want to connect it, Kelly, back to you around, you know, in that long-term planning, I think sometimes we can get really caught up in how it's all going to turn out. Right, and really obsessed with what that long term is, and am I doing the right thing in order to get from A to Z?
Right.
When that kind of fear shows up, what is the tactical thing to do?
Well, I think first and foremost, you have to think about what resilience is.
Yeah. What is it?
Okay. So resilience is, number one, the ability to put yourself out there and take that risk and be willing to hit the mat and then bounce back up again.
Hmm. Yeah.
And
have the three of you gotten everything right in your careers?
No. Oh, God, I mean, really?
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of bouncing back up that has
happened. There was a major bounce in the March of last year. But truly, it's that you hit the mat and you bounce back up, but how do we bounce, right? How do we actually do that? Well, you have to practice.
Yeah.
You have to put yourself in the ring, be willing to get knocked down, do that thing that scares you, do that thing that makes you feel like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm gonna do this right now. Be willing to do that. We as women default to perfectionism or pleasing, and we're always trying to be like, I was listening to your story and thinking, it's that good girl syndrome. I have to be the good girl. I don't want to rock this boat.
Yes.
When I said to my husband years ago, it's almost 10 years ago now, I want to start a company. Like, this is what I want to do. I want to start a business. This is the direction I'm going to go in. And I knew I was upsetting a major apple cart that had been on a track for a very, very long time. It was upsetting the apple cart for my children. It was upsetting the apple cart for my just the whole community of people around me. But I did it anyway. And I did it because I needed to tell myself, sister, you have your own back in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the essence of resilience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's teaching yourself that you have your own back.
Yeah.
That you can do if when everything goes wrong, right? When everybody is telling you, every disruptor in your life is showing up at the threshold of the door telling you every reason why medical school is not a possibility for you, you say to yourself in that moment, I've got my own back, and get out of my way.
Woo! Yeah.
Okay. You've got your own back. We have our own back. I'm going to need some of you to have your own back and ask a question. Before you do, I want to say that we have a couple people with books up here who will be signing immediately after this. I know a lot of you like to leave during Q&A. So your book, Bust Up, will be down at the exhibition hall, and she'll be signing and taking selfies and talking to you. My book, You're Not Lost.
Maxie McCoy.
I'll be downstairs talking to you, hugging you.
and our social media team is picking a winner within 5 minutes. So if you don't hear from me in 5 minutes on Instagram, come join us down at the book place.
Yeah. So with that, we have a couple questions that we'll be able to take.
Yeah.
We've got a mic over here, and a mic over here, and a mic over there. Give me all of that blue hair.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me? My name is Afton. I am 23 years old, and I just want to start off by saying I wish I could have found something like this as soon as I graduated from high school. It would have saved me a lot
of think
time.
We would all say us too, which is why we're doing the work that we do.
But I had a question, and you kind of touch here and there on answering it, all of you guys. But my question is, what if you have too many options? And if you feel stuck not making a choice and trying not to feel overwhelmed from not making a choice?
Well, I think what I would say to that is look for the energy. Like, what brings you energy? And actually log it. Like, write it down. You know, I did this and this brought me energy. So when I'm gonna use myself as an example. I was an educator. That's the path, the traditional path that I thought I was supposed to be on. And it was like, then I got overwhelmed because I got in there and it was, there was the teaching piece and then there was the administration piece and then there was there were so many different animals that I was, you know, in the wilderness with. And I wish I could go back to that 22-year-old and say to her, follow the energy of what you really get your fire from. Mm. And it was standing in front of those kids. I could get goosebumps when I did it. I get goosebumps right now just saying it. I would, like, you can viscerally feel it in your body. When you are doing what really calls you, you can viscerally feel it in your body. So just put that on your radar screen from now until a month from now.
One thing I just want to add to that really quickly is that I think of this as what you're really describing is an inflection point. There's a lot of literature out there around inflection points. And it almost feels like you're at this wide open road, right? So many possibilities, a huge mega highway with a million different exits you could take. Then you take one exit by chance or by luck or by, you know, by having no other exits to take. And then you find yourself on a back road. You're doing well or you're not doing so well. You find yourself eventually off that main highway and maybe you don't like the scenery anymore. We can't throw it back in reverse and go back the way we came, but that wide open road of possibility hasn't gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to keep in mind whatever road you choose, you can always come back. It might require a little off-roading, right? The journey might not be smooth. But remember that you're not choosing forever. Like, the choices are always there.
And I wouldn't even say you need to go back. You change directions, and it's fine, right? So, and I think the first piece is, and we've all been there. I remember when I decided, do I want to be a dancer? I used to be a dance teacher, and I was actually, started off being a dance major before I went to pre-med.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and that's when you shut everything out, right? And you go back to your own core. And there's never a wrong direction for you, ever. Because as we said before, it's the journey, it's the university, right? If you take life as a university, wherever you go, you're gonna learn. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna grow. And you're going to be, right? So you go there, whatever feels right, again, in your own head, shut out the world and go back into what feels right for you, and you go there. And think of it as, this is my next university. This is what am I gonna learn from this? What am I gonna gain from this? What am I gonna give to, you know, what am I, and then after that, then wherever that leads you, you take it to the next road. But there is never a wrong path for you to choose.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, hi, my name is Tina. I have a question for Emily and also Tanya, if that's okay. Emily, you mentioned that you should tap into some of your negative emotions like envy, And I was wondering what brought you to that perspective, because I've been there before and I've sort of shut it out, but then I realized, oh, maybe I am, you know, I envy this person because I want something that they have.
Yeah.
But then I shut it out because that's how you're raised, because that's not okay.
I have a funny anecdote for you. So, a couple years ago, was starting to draft this book. I had no book deal, because how the hell do you get a book deal, right? Big question mark, how does that happen? And I said I knew that I wanted this book to be a thing, but I don't know how to make it happen, because you need other people's help to make this happen. And there was a woman I knew who was writing a book, who had a book deal, who was posting on Instagram about it, sometimes from Bali, which is a whole other story.
Yeah.
Hashtag diary of a book dream, right. Maxie McCoy. So I'm hustling in my little startup. You know, I got no financial backing, so I'm just trying to make rent payments while I'm starting my business. And this was years ago. Mm-hmm. How many years ago did you start the book?
2016.
Okay, so it's been a little while.
2015. Actually.
And I remember rage quitting Instagram watching you write your book.
I was the one she blocked.
I don't believe
it's really fun to find out on stage.
But it's true.
No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, and I had two choices. I could either suppress that feeling, right, and block the person and ignore the information. It's so real. This is so real.
This is amazing.
Or I could DM or email this woman and be like, yo, Maxie, I'm having a tough time. Like, I just fired my second book agent.
I remember that.
Who called my project muddled. Good luck with your muddled project coming to fruition. Cool, thanks. Great. Yeah. Super confident as I'm, like, just trying to make it work. And I remember emailing you and reaching out and saying, can I pick your brain? No, I didn't say that.
We were already friends.
We were already pals. And I was like, how did this happen? And I did that with every other author I could get a hold of in any way.
I had done that with every other author before me. So you also find that which you're envying, I had envied at one
point,
too, so I wanted to give all the wisdom that had been given to me on. Yep.
So the reason I believe in that philosophy is because it creates choice out of a negative emotion. Mm-hmm. You have a choice of how you process that negative emotion. You can either let it wash over you, like stress does, right? Or you can say, what about Maxie's Diary of a Book Dream was triggering stress for me? And if I could acknowledge, wow, this is something I really want, I could decide in that moment to ask for help.
Right.
And that's what led me here. That's why we're here. That's why this thing is here, right? And that's why I talk to aspiring authors all the time, just like Maxie did for me. So I'm a big believer of that philosophy because I've seen it work. If we give ourselves the grace to have a negative emotion and then peel back the layers behind it.
And I think that's true for all of us, right? None of us got here by ourselves.
No.
And it's dropping some of those guards down to be vulnerable enough to ask people for help. And how did you get there? Like, I'm fascinated by people. And how did they get to where they were? Yeah. Right? And so if you kind of let go of those layers and say, you know, it's okay to ask. It does not make me less of a person. It's okay to be jealous because I'm not where I want to be or where that person is.
Right.
It's okay. Shed those layers and go and ask, how did you get there? How did you do that? Like, I want to do that. Tell me how.
And then when someone does ask you, be fucking honest.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's just like doing the glossy thing is annoying.
Yeah.
Thank you
guys
so much.
But you have to separate your work from your worth to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because if my identity and my whole sense of self-worth is wrapped up in an achievement, then before I've achieved it, I will feel not worthy. Yeah. And then I will behave in a way that is self-destructive.
Yeah.
So also, shout out to therapy! Because that's also a big answer, a part of the answer.
Okay, on that.
Yeah. Hashtag therapy for the win.
Our last question.
Okay, my name is Carrie, and my mother-in-law was in town for a visit this summer and said to me, you're not enjoying your life.
Aww.
And I felt like that was so critical, but I think it bothered me because it's true.
Mm.
And it made me question, though, am I at a place in my life where I can make decisions based on what's best for me? Because I have a husband who's chasing his career pursuits and traveling a lot, and I have two small children, and I have a very demanding job myself. So I'm very much stuck because I feel the weight of the impact of my decisions on my family. And so how do you navigate having a fulfilling career, feeling like a successful mother, and supporting your spouse so that they can reach their professional goals as well?
Such a great question. Well, yeah. So number one, I want to say this to you. Your mother-in-law is a disruptor. My mother-in-law can be one too. I love her, but she can be one. But the disruptor is a great role in our life because you can take a 2% truth. A 2% truth is, oh my God, I might not be happy, right? And you can grow from that. It can empower your life. So that's number one. But number two, I would ask you, how is your own self-care right now? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And self-care is not a pedicure, everyone. That's not going to cut it, especially for a busy woman who has so many demands in her life. You have to think about how you're, like, triage right now. Because to be able to have enough creativity and the ability to strategically think about what direction you want your life to go in, you've got to be in a good place with your self-care. Mm. So triage physically. How are you taking care of yourself? Mm-hmm. How are you eating? How are you sleeping? Are you drinking enough water? Those things you can start tomorrow. You can actually do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then emotionally, how are you taking care of yourself emotionally? Do you have a circle of people around you that actually have the strength to hold you? You have a big life, and you need strong people to hold you. Mm. When you are strong, and everyone hear this. Mm-hmm. Someone said this to me once. I have to say this in this room.
Do it.
When you are a strong female in the world, you better figure out who the people are that can hold you.
Yes.
Because you will attract everyone that mm-hmm. you can hold. Mm-hmm. Mm. So figure out who can hold you. That's emotionally. Then mentally. How are you stimulating yourself mentally? Maybe you don't have to change your career or your job right at this minute, but you can be exploring and assessing all over the place. Mm. You can be planning and strategically thinking about, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? What are the possibilities? That in and of itself can fill you up. And then the last one is spiritually. And that might look like a religion, or that might look like a walk on a trail in nature. Hmm. Yeah. But you need to find spaces for peace in your life. Oof. We are overstimulated uh-huh. as a society. It's so clear. And you have to find those quiet spaces and places in your life.
Yeah. I would just like the record to reflect that most of our male partners, if that's your situation, don't ask themselves permission, right? Don't ask for permission right. because you didn't make those choices alone, right? You didn't make those babies alone, right? Like, he made some choices, and then he's decided that he can travel and he can explore too. So we yeah. need to ask men not just to be equal partners, but to be sponsors yeah. of our freedom. And expect it.
Yeah. And drop the guilt. And it's hard to do that, yeah. right?
It
so
is.
I say it.
Easier said than done.
But trust me, I feel guilty half the time, right? Yeah. And then I just say, okay, tone that down, tone down the guilt, and let's focus on this. But we have to allow ourselves to drop the guilt. Mm-hmm. And then I would say to you, think long and hard, what will make you happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, and only you can answer that. Yeah. What will make you happy? And then you start carving out that space that makes you happy, and then you start pinpointing other things to circle around yeah. it, right? But you and only you can answer that question. Be true to yourself.
And you're already here. Yeah. So you're making that progress right. already.
So much. so much of everything that all three of you have shared does not necessarily mean that you have to take a categorical change.
Right.
But that all of this can happen in really small moments. So just ask yourself, from this conversation, from all the advice that you just heard, what's the smallest thing that you can do when you walk out of this door? And that will have an impact. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you,
Maxie.
Thank you.